All right, we're going to jump right into the next one. And that next one is feedback loops. So we're going to talk about feedback loops in general and lots of different things. This one's going to be a little bit faster discussion. The other one was quick too, but feedback loops are just interesting. I think they're foundational to what we do. Basically, finding and exploiting feedback loops is the heart of pretty much everything we've talked about today.
It is. It is indeed. It is the heart. It's everything, right? Everything that we've ever, anybody Agile has ever talked about is about finding new ways to shorten feedback loops and find new feedback loops. That's pretty much the heart.
Yeah. And to get them faster. In fact, we're going to list several right now. If you pop down here, things like ATDD, TDD, test automation, unit testing.
Right.
Unit testing is just a fast way to get feedback on your architecture, on your method.
The line of code that you just wrote.
Exactly, and then we step that up to potentially ATDD, acceptance test-driven development, where people are writing acceptance tests. Go ahead.
Any level of pre-production testing is a way to get feedback, right?
Exactly.
If it happened before production, your whole point was to have a feedback cycle before production, right?
Yep, or even after production. It's still, if you can get feedback quickly by pushing into production and having maybe a small subset of people, fail at something, you know something right away. Let's get that information as fast as we possibly can. I think that's the difference, too, between something like continuous integration or continuous deployment, especially. If we can deploy value to our customers on a really fast basis, taking into account our U-shaped optimization for when it's economically feasible to do that, we push those things out quickly, we can get fast feedback back in. Storyboards, another way to get feedback.
Right.
I mean, just a mock-up. Let's get feedback. Debugging tools, peer reviews, WIP limits. XP, extreme programming, has like 10 major things.
Yeah, we'll get there.
And we're going to get there. Yeah, exactly. All right. Slow feedback sucks.
Yeah,
how does it, and I'm going to throw this over to you because...
Wait.
Or do you want me to do it?
I was going
to
let you do this one.
Oh, okay, I'll do this one.
I think this one's yours.
All right, so slow feedback.
I thought you were going to do the shower one.
I'm going to go there. So this is also available on Channel 9 if you want to listen to a talk I did at TechEd last year. Something along these lines. It was about feedback. But the story goes like this. Right. If I put it, it's the only time I've ever had nudity in a talk, and I hate to bring it up here too, but whoops, I'm getting strange looks from the rest of the crew.
You just said what?
So don't I was worry. Standing there naked. So, I was, and it reaching in, feeling the water. It's a little bit cold still. I turn it up a little bit. I'm obviously just getting ready to take a shower and head into work. Feeling it in a hotel, feeling the water, still cold, turn it up a little bit more, still cold, turn it up a bit more, still cold. Oh my goodness, crank it up a lot. Oh, it's finally starting to get warm. Jump into the shower, start to lather up, it's now immensely hot and I'm out, right? I'm just immediately out, popped over outside the thing, turning it down, turning it to still too hot. That slow feedback cycle is not fun. Let's put it this way. There was a bunch of water in process, right? There was water in process through the pipes, and I'd change it, and it was a very slow time to get that feedback back. And because that feedback was so slow, it took me longer to take a shower than I normally would have, i.e. I wasted a lot of water. I was irritated. Everything was bad about the whole experience. I didn't even like the hotel, right?
Yeah, now you hate the hotel.
Now I hate the
everything
hotel.
Everything else, the stuff that normally would have just barely bothered you about the hotel, now you're like, oh.
Right, the internet, it was bad. Right. The refrigerator
was terrible.
Bad. Everything was bad. Because I didn't get fast feedback from that shower. I think it's a great example. One of the few examples that you can actually...
So I was standing there naked.
Only time you can say that. So why do we care about these feedback loops? because they generate information, right?
Right.
I reached in, felt the water. It was still too cold. It was a fast feedback in my feeling of the water, and I could keep going in and keep going back at it. That wasn't the problem. It was that it wasn't taking the feedback back from my twisting of the knob. So they generate information, and that can help us reduce uncertainty.
But we can take this to the next level, right? So most of us have probably heard that story before. Not that particular story, but a version of that story, right? Where feedback, everything is about feedback. Feedback faster, 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 faster. Automate everything because it's the only way to be agile. We covered that earlier. Feedback loops have economics just like everything else, and they're subject to our economic framework just like everything else. Tightening those feedback loops costs money. Building the continuous deployment framework costs money. Building the continuous testing framework costs money. Every time we shorten that feedback loop, it's going to add to our expense. And we need to balance that with the actual value of the information that that feedback loop is generating, right? So this cost is typically non-linear after a point, right? It's very inexpensive to shorten the feedback loop for a certain period of time, but then you get to a point where having the feedback loop again costs you exponentially more money, right? Yep. To go from the ability to deploy once a week to deploy once an hour typically can be very expensive.
Yep.
Who's the level of automated tests that you need to have and the level of escalations of issues that you need to have, the ability to deploy to a subset of your customer base and all those sorts of things, right? That's exponentially more expensive. So we need to be able to balance these things. It's not just all or nothing, but it's important to know that feedback loops have economics in and of themselves.
Yep, and that is important to recognize. I stand on the feedback side as to, I think right now, if we're in the, Shuhari.
Right.
I think most of the world today is in the shu area, which just says, you know, just shorten the feedback loops,
right?
Because you don't understand them well enough. And when you're doing that cost benefit analysis, you may not understand. In other words, I like this back because it's definitely an economic discussion, but I'm going to urge you to think hard about the economics because they go beyond what's intention or what's immediately obvious.
Right.
We did the penny game, and when we did the penny game, people's behavior changed with their teammates. That was not an expected well, it was expected to us because we've seen it so many times. Not an expected outcome to the rest of the attendees.
Right.
That behavior change is something that just happens, and that has an economic benefit as well. So there's so many wonderful things that pile on with feedback that it's hard necessarily to measure all of those. So my stance is I fit on the shoe side, Shuhari, the being make sure that if in doubt, shorten the feedback loops until you start hitting that nonlinear point, and then you realize it. You realize, oh my goodness,
yeah. It's not. And the good news is when you hit that nonlinear point, you usually find out very, very quickly that you've hit that point, right? Like we go to organizations all the time that have month-long sprints, and we say you probably need to go the two-week sprints. Right.
Yeah.
So and making that switch has obvious benefits. You shorten that feedback cycle. They drop their batch sizes and those sorts of things. Now, going from the 2-week sprint to a 1-week sprint sometimes is not economically optimum for the teams and where they're at in their progression in that direction right now. So just understanding that the amount of pain relative to the change is typically very obvious once you hit the nonlinear point.
That is a great point, which is pain. And I think that we've talked about that in Kanban, and we're certainly going to talk about it in the organizational change one next week. But the amount of pain needs to be manageable.
Right.
And sometimes shrinking your feedback cycle can cause an awful lot of pain. And it's got to be manageable. The team, the organization, the people have to be able to absorb that change as well. And that's pretty important. So, the problems with extreme programming.
This one's all me, so I get to pick the fight. Okay, extreme programming. For those of you haven't been introduced to this topic before, I'll give my 30-second intro to extreme programming. Extreme programming is the idea that if code review is good, we take it to the extreme and we do pair programming. If unit testing is good, we take it to the extreme and we do test-driven development. That's kind of the core philosophy behind extreme programming. Now, extreme programming practitioners will obviously have caveats and ideas about why that's not true and blah, 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 blah. But that's sort of the core philosophy behind extreme programming. And it was insanely valuable when introduced as a way to break from the previous paradigm of extremely long feedback loops.
Right. It was extreme programming before. It was just the other extreme.
Right. We went from one, but as I dislike extremism in almost all its forms, right? Just because moving from one extreme to the other extreme, while the extreme programming extreme is cheaper and you will deliver better software at the extreme programming extreme than the 2-year cycle extreme, it's still an extreme. And you're probably not economically optimum. Now, the economically optimum point is probably way closer to extreme programming than a 2-year cycle. Don't misunderstand me. However, it goes back to that rhetoric idea of defining something as an absolute and always going to that absolute, right? We want to step that back again with to move to the ha level. We need to understand that there are economics involved and this is a trade-off. Just like everything else, this is a trade-off where we're trading money, basically capacity, for information via shortened feedback loops. And we need to understand that that's the trade-off that we're making.
Yeah, I think one of the key examples that I've seen in extreme programming is that, just pulling that example, was the 3x5 card. All
right.
Your requirements
exactly
fit on a 3x5 card. Well, you know what? Sometimes having a mock-up in PowerPoint really helps,
yep,
and it can really accelerate things. And we see this, I think there's pendulums that swing, and we've seen the pendulum on the 80 to 100 page requirements. We've swung down to the 3x5 note card, and I think now we're coming into the further
right
off that, where we say, let's do the minimum amount of documentation to effectively develop the software. What's the right approach? And I think pulling that back is something that we're seeing coming off of extreme programming.
Right. I totally agree.
And again, for the extreme programming aficionados, it's a great tool for getting you some amazing results. We're bringing this from the discussion of HA,
right,
and saying, you know what, not in all cases, you may want to back up to further optimize. But we hear this a lot, people coming back and saying, oh, well, yeah, that 2-week sprint cycle's hard. Why don't we just
do... It's difficult to break down,
yeah,
like our requirements like that.
Why don't we do an 8-week sprint cycle instead? And the argument here is not the one we're making.
Right.
It's not because extreme programming is hard that you should not do its tenets, or that Scrum is hard,
right,
and you should not follow its tenets. It's that you have to take the economic and the value and actually measure and think through the problems and make trade-offs effectively.
Yep.
Just because it hurts doesn't mean it's bad. There would be no physical fitness folks anywhere in the world if it wasn't for, you know, if it wasn't that physical fitness gave you something, you know, the pain you went through at a gym. So the bottom line, as I think as you put it,
right,
it's perfect, right? The feedback loops are optimization problems, and you got to balance that shortening of the feedback loop with the value of the information gained.
But what Steve said was vitally important. When in doubt, go shorter. Because if you're in doubt about your feedback loops, they're too long. If you've gotten to the point where you now know what to do, knowing what to do might be increase the length of the feedback loop, but if you don't know what it is you're supposed to do, just go shorter, and
yeah,
and you'll probably maybe making the right decision. Just go shorter.
Yeah, yeah, in general. And then as you,
yeah,
as you mature a little bit in your knowledge, it's you may decide to go longer in particular cases. I've made that recommendation myself. When someone's decomposing things into smaller and smaller units of work, at some point I'm saying, you know, I know this is something that's really hard to decompose.
Yep.
It would take a lot of artificial decomposition, frankly. leave it kind of bigger and
just deal with it.
And deal with it. And swarm it with a bunch of people as you're pushing it through your Kanban board so it doesn't constipate your flow.
We go back to that, to cycle back to local optimization versus system optimization, right? It kind of fits in that conversation as well of what to do, how long to make your feedback loops.
Let's wave our culture flag on this one. If you understand your feedback loops, and by understanding feedback loops, you can help build that culture of experimentation and retrospection. This is, I think, just from a managerial perspective.
Right.
If someone comes and says, I can get feedback for you in a year and a half, and it'll cost me $10.8 million, my initial response is, what? Are you crazy? That's not going to happen. But if someone comes back and says, let me do a really small thing for you. Let's get some feedback. Based on that feedback, we'll have learned something. Then we can go, let's experiment. I'm totally willing to do that. I'm going to use our courseware example, how we built our lean and agile courseware for Northwest Cadence. We build courseware, and Andrew was key part of that. And the first thing Andrew did was said, you know, we really need something that we can bring these discussions to with our customers. And Andrew said, I'll build it. We said, great. It's going to take a long time, however.
Right.
So the very first thing Andrew said, because he thinks about these fast feedback things, is let's not build it yet. How about I build you a really quick, just a pitch, an abstract for what it'll be like. You give me feedback on your experience if you think this will resonate with customers. He cranked out a very quick abstract, gave it to me, and I was like, oh, yeah. We bounced it off Lori, the president of Northwest Cadence, and she's like, oh, yeah, this we think it'll resonate. So the next thing we did is we built a one-hour overview presentation, a webcast, if you would, and then we present the webcast, get customer feedback. We get a really fast feedback without much investment. Then it becomes a half-day course. That half-day course is then taught once or twice to figure out, well, you know, do people like it, et cetera? Beta presentation even. And then it goes to a full-day course to a two-day course.
Yep.
Right? And that was kind of that evolution of the course and how it went. We made the investments incrementally, and huge props to Andrew because he drove that decision. We had before built some of our courseware in this big bang thing, and frankly, some of it has yet to be taught sometimes, and that's a terrible way to do it.
Right.
Our popular courses are built this way. Now, I mean, it's the only way we'd ever build courses today, right? And that's that idea, this fast feedback. Do something, get feedback. And that allows you to create an innovative culture. And I guarantee you, when you talk to your senior level management and your mid-level management, they're not ever going to say, no, we don't want any experimentation. What they do want is an understanding that their risk is being minimized. Try something small. Learn something, try something slightly bigger, learn something more, and grow it into the product that you want to deliver or the idea that you want to take on.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah, please.
Because just as important in that, though, is that if the thing that you learn is that this doesn't work, ignore the sunk cost and stop doing that thing. Right, like this course it happened to work on, we've done other courses where it didn't work on.
Yeah.
We went to a beta and it was like, They had no idea what we were talking about, and it was totally pointless, right? So you have to be able to. I find in a lot of organizations that are starting to make the transition to this, they, even when the information that they're getting is telling them to stop going down a path, everyone is afraid to make that, this is a dumb thing to do, let's stop and go do something else. You have to really embrace the ability to make that decision as. Otherwise, your feedback loop is completely pointless, right? It's like the organizations that we've gone to that have 500 failing unit tests, and people go, oh, we're just expect that 497 unit tests fail every build. And we only know to check our unit tests if 498 fail. Well, you invested in a feedback loop that you're not listening to the feedback from, so you know, don't do that.
Exactly. Absolutely, exactly. I think that's a wonderful point. That's a really good point, which is you've got to tolerate that failure as well. Because you learn something. Act on that learning.
Yep.
All right. Andrew, feedback. Have we covered it well enough? Should we need anything more that we need to add before we wrap?
I'm happy.
All right. We're going to go to questions after this. We're going to take a look during the break. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to come back, and we'll talk about managing queues, which... interestingly, comes back to another penny game. but a different one.
We love pennies.
We'll see you in 10 minutes.